Hello and welcome to the Midweek F1 podcast with me, Jenny Gow, standing in for Nicola Hume, and the F1 commentating colossus who loves a Grand Prix in Azerbaijan. Please welcome Baku, Ben Edwards.
Yay!
Thanks so much, Jenny. I had a fantastic weekend. I really enjoyed commentating on Baku this weekend, which I have done in the past. So, oh, magic.
Well, this is a show that gives you the last word on the race just gone and the first look at the Grand Prix ahead of us. And don't forget to click the bell and subscribe or hit the follow button so you don't miss a single episode. So, Ben, what a weekend.
Oh, it was. It was fascinating. The streets of Baku, they are so unusual. They're so unique. And the kind of qualifying and racing that we had there, it was all bizarre. So we've got plenty to talk about with what happened with the Grand Prix in Azerbaijan.
Yeah, as you say, so much to cover. And we've got a special guest in the house, the presenter of Fast and Curious podcast and many others as well. It is Christian Hugill.
Jenny, it's an absolute joy to be here. I feel wildly out of my depth. I'm alongside two Formula One broadcasting legends. So I'm not fully sure what I'm doing here, but I am delighted to be here nonetheless. So thank you.
Well, we are delighted for you to join us because you can steer our good merry ship along the way as well. great to have you with us. And also, we'll get your thoughts on We Need to Talk About That feature, which
okay.
I'm really keen to talk. I mean, it's the continuing saga of how you manage two McLaren drivers. And of course, you've got lots of opinions on that.
I've got many opinions on it, and no matter which one I have, I'll probably get abuse for it. So I very much look forward to that. Yeah, I would love that.
We're also going to get you predicting what's going to happen in the next race in Singapore. I mean, that's going to be an interesting one. You love predicting, don't you?
No, Ben. I am awful at predictions. I was saying on the Fast and the Curious, as you just said, Jenny, I don't think I've got a single one right this year. I think I'm arguably the worst Formula One predictor in any podcast, in anywhere ever. So yeah, I'm glad that I'm representing the guest team, not having to represent Nicola, who I understand is quite competitive on this process.
She's very good. She's very good, and she did a lot better than I did the last time. We'll come up with that a little bit later on. In the meantime.
Well, the Azerbaijan Grand Prix threw up lots of things to talk about. Of course, we were thinking it might be the championship decider. Turned out not to be. Of course, qualifying lasted forever. It was very disrupted. 6 red flags. Unbelievable. And then I was so excited to sit down and watch the race. And actually, I don't think it really delivered so much. Max won. Great. Piastri crested out after a jump start. It was just a weird race and it left me in a weird place. Am I wrong in thinking that?
Are you okay? You're right?
So kind. I'm fine.
Good.
But I feel like I just want to forget yesterday.
Okay.
It was a bit, I mean, I was commentating on it the weekend and the qualifying, that took 2 hours to get through. I mean, it just, you know, as you said, so many red flags, so many cars off, the delays that kept on going. I have to say that once Max Verstappen took that pole position, which was brilliantly done, and, you know, looking at the grid after that and seeing, right, Carlos Sainz is next to him, and then we've got Liam Lawson up there, and the thought that Max might dominate, that wasn't too surprising, really, but you never really know. And there were lots of... I do understand what you say about the race. The race itself, we didn't get as much overtaking in the race as I sort of expected we might get a bit more, partly because of the weather there as well, that wind that was blowing. That made it a little bit more difficult. But we'll talk about all this. And yes, there's a few questions coming up.
Yes, which I'm excited about, because producer Jim is standing by as ever. And we're going to pick out some of the best storylines from this weekend. So, producer Jim, what have you got?
Okay, let's start with the championship leader's worst race all year. Piastri jumps the start, realises, nearly stalls. Everyone streams past him. Then he crashes on cold tyres. Has the heat of the championship battle finally got to Mr. Chill? Discuss.
Well, Oscar Piastri had a rubbish weekend. There's no doubt about it. You know.
Your official judgment. Well, rubbish.
he's a brilliant driver.
Ben, but stay with me. You've got a bit technical. Just stay here. Stay with me a minute.
But it all went a bit wrong for him. And, you know, I can understand that. I know what it's like for racing drivers. And Baku's not an easy place anyway, and particularly with the weather we had. And he was so impressive there last year. I remember commentating on that pass he made on Charles Leclerc to take the win. And yet this weekend, everything just went away from him. He had a technical problem in the car at the beginning of practice. Then he had that qualifying, got into Q3, but then made a mistake in qualifying. And then to make a mistake at the start, that's so rare. He's such a good starter off the line. I don't think that he's changed. I don't think that, you know, we need to worry, oh, he's suddenly not going to be there next time. He will be. I think he's just one of those drivers that it just didn't work this weekend. For whatever reason, he can make a switch and move on. What do you guys think?
I completely agree with you, Ben. I think, firstly, it's just a reminder of how much we love this sport, isn't it? We talk about how rubbish we all are at predictions. If you're asking us to predict what might happen in the Baku Grand Prix, you would never in a million years think the man who has almost looked bulletproof this season would A, put it in the wall in qualifying, but then B, in the race, fall to the back because he messed up doing a jump start and had to slow down and got all messy there, and then again make another mistake and put it in the wall again. You couldn't wish for a more unpredictable sequence of events, which I just think summarises the great Murray Walker. Anything could happen in Formula One, and it usually does.
It does.
Perfect example of that there. But then, yes, the race didn't quite deliver as much, but I guess it's delivered that huge story. I agree with you, Ben. It's probably the biggest test of Oscar Piastri's Formula One career. He's never had this much spotlight on him. He's never had this much pressure on him. So will he go to Singapore and be able to press the reset button? Because he's also had two weekends where Lando's been the quicker McLaren, really. So is he going to be able to go and reset in Singapore? I agree with you, Ben. I suspect he will.
And one thing, Jenny, is he's still championship leader. And that is what matters to these top level racers thinking, right, I'm still in front.
By 25 points, that's the gap as well. A clear race win. So he could DNF again next time out. And good chances are he'd still be up there leading the championship. So we can't forget that. However, do we think the pressure has got to him, or do you think there's something else going on?
I don't think the pressure's got to him as such, no. I think he's made a mistake. I think he's had a really messy weekend. I think he's had a messy weekend on a weekend that's particularly tricky. You think of Baku, it's a really unique combination. If you've got these long straights, well, a long straight, where usually there'd be a very skinny wing, but actually it's not that simple in Baku, because you can't knock off all your downforce because you've got the tight, twisty bits. Throw that into a damp track, a cold track, leaves on the track, painted white lines. It's a chaotic weekend for a reason, right? There's a reason we've seen so many of them make mistakes. And I think we've got to remember, this is a guy who is showing that he, in my view, will win world championships, whether he wins this one or not. He'll win them. But he's still young and he's still human. I don't think we've seen anything majorly significant in the career of Oscar Piastri. I think we've seen a still comparatively young racing driver make a couple of mistakes. And I do think it's as simple as that. I do think he'll bounce back.
Producer Jim.
Okay, Lando Norris misses out on a golden opportunity to capitalise on Oscar's crash, finds himself stuck in a DRS train before a lengthy pit stop loses him an all-important 2 seconds to jump Tsunoda and Lawson. Is this the second track that doesn't suit McLaren, or is the worm turning? Discuss.
For me, this is definitely a track that never was going to suit McLaren. The car doesn't like following. It doesn't like wind. There's a lot of wind in Baku, the city of wind. I just think that low downforce was not their friend. And Monza and this one were always going to hurt them. And it's really easy to look at those last two races and think, oh, they've lost it. Red Bull are up there, they're challenging, they're going to win. But actually, when we get to Singapore, that will be a track that suits them really well. Vegas is another track that won't suit the McLaren. Think of that when you're going ahead, going forward, and think, okay, that race won't be won by them. Maybe it's a Mercedes one, maybe it's a Max Verstappen, who knows. But McLaren have already set out the races they'll struggle with, last two and Vegas. And I think it's as simple as that.
What are your thoughts, Christian, on Lando's weekend?
I think Lando could have done more and should have done more. If you're going to win a world championship, you need to take advantage when your title rivals give you gifts like Oscar gave him this weekend. I think Lando is a phenomenal talent. I think he's a great racing driver. I think he's capable of fighting for world championships. But it's starting to feel a little bit like last season for me, where he could catch Max, but it just doesn't feel like he will. Fans of Lando point to, well, yeah, they didn't execute qualifying perfectly. They sent him out on a cold track. Fine. I still think, put Max in that situation, he's qualifying higher up. He's at least getting into the top five. He's probably getting into the top three. He's probably putting it on pole. And then in the race, as Ben said right at the top, it is tricky to overtake in Baku. Great sympathy for him. The pit stop won't have helped. Andrea Stella came out after the race and said, actually, that didn't help. That didn't you know, hinder us massively.
That's right.
But I just think if Lando's going to catch Oscar Piastri and also fend off the challenge of Max Verstappen, I think we needed a little bit more from him this weekend.
Yeah, I was a little surprised we didn't get a touch more because he is such a talent. But it just didn't come together. That qualifying, as you say, going out. I understand why he went out sort of first in that last little run, whereas Max went out pretty much last. And sometimes, of course, just a few more cars going around, there's a bit more grip and it can help you. But yeah, I was a little frustrated that Lando couldn't just get a little bit more out of it.
What I'll say in defense of both drivers, this is a long Formula One season. It feels like in many ways it's just started. In many ways it's been going on for about 38 years. But it wasn't too long ago where at the start of the season, McLaren was saying, our advantage isn't as big as everyone says it is because this car is a bit of a diva. It's a bit tricky to keep under control. And that's a reminder of that this weekend.
Yeah.
There
were times where actually when we were watching practice that both Piastri and Norris were flicking oversteer. It looked tricky. It really did look tricky at times for both drivers.
It's a beast of a car. Its highs are capable of very highs, but we both mentioned the wind.
Yeah.
And all the factors that make Baku tricky. That is a part defence of Oscar and Lando this weekend, that it is a tricky car. And I think undoubtedly, to go back to producer Jim's point, I think the Red Bull they've tamed it a little bit. Again, another real diva-ish car that only this superhuman, ridiculous, mega-human that Max Verstappen can tame. The fact that Yuki was higher up, I think Red Bull have definitely calmed this car down a little bit. That's massively helped. We see Yuki's improved performance this weekend, his best performance in a Red Bull by country mile. So I think all of those factors, and of course, if you make your car a little bit more drivable, the Red Bull have got this talent that is going to win the race.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, producer Jim.
Okay, after nearly taking each other off at turn one, it was a very solid result for the Mercedes pair. Did Toto's public telling off last week do the trick? Discuss.
Oh, poor Kimi Antonelli getting sort of sat on the bench and said, you're not good enough. Very public for Toto Wolff to actually say that out loud in front of all the media and give him a dressing down. But do you think it's what he needed? Did it work? Or was it just fortunate?
I think in a way, sometimes Toto has to be straight. And, you know, that's exactly how he felt. You can't sort of put everything away that the media won't pick up, you know. And I think he was just being very straight. He was just feeling that Kimi hadn't quite delivered what he could have done in Monza. As we know, you know, he still scored a couple of points, but he was lower down than he should have been. But actually, he did do a great job this weekend. And in qualifying, at one moment, it really looked like he was not going to even get out of Q1. And to be fair to Kimi Antonelli, he every session just snatched a good lap. And to out-qualify George for only the second time this year, that was very, very promising. But then talking about Mercedes in general, what George did, not feeling great this weekend, and then to get a second place was fantastic.
He looked terrible. Yeah, he looked at the end of the race. God love him. He looked like he needed a Horlicks, a Lemsip, and to go and lie down. In the pen at the end of the race, he was pale. He looked dreadful. On the radio on Friday, sounded like a Dalek. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
We were saying before the show when we were having a coffee, it's a sign of how superhuman they are. Because in that situation, if I'm George Russell, I'm saying, tell you what, give it Valtteri for the weekend. I'm off for a lie down. I'm not fighting for a world championship. I feel like death. I'm going for a bath. But they're built. That's why I'm not a Formula One driver. They're built differently. Unbelievably impressive from George Russell this weekend, because it furthers my theory that if Mercedes give him a car that's capable of fighting for a world championship, I think he's capable. I think he'll be right up there.
That might be next year.
New
power units, who knows? We don't know yet, but yeah, it's possible.
But to the point, also Kimi's best weekend. And actually, I'm fascinated by Toto Wolff. I think he's one of sport's great, fascinating leaders, like Pep Guardiola, who I know that the two of them talk. So I was really surprised. Toto is more of an arm round the shoulder guy than he is a hairdryer treatment guy. So I was a little bit surprised to see him be so punchy in the media post-Italy of going, it was underwhelming, particularly when Kimi is, bless him, only 7 years of age. You think he is going to go on the sort of more relaxed tone. But maybe it did work. Maybe it has bucked Kimi's ideas up. I doubt it. I think it's probably more coincidence. I've never doubted Kimi's talent. I always thought we'd see the pace of the early season return, and I think we have done that. He'll now want to build on that. He'll now want to be consistent for the rest of the season and show that it was just a mid-season blip and recover that early season form, and I think there's every chance we'll see that.
I mean, great confidence booster as well for him. Kimi just needed a good result, and I think Perfect.
And a clean weekend, which he, yeah, which he had in a,
just, yeah, just about rescued it.
But also in a clean weekend where so many others didn't, yeah, where it was so tricky to keep the car on the track for all the reasons we've been discussing. So he'll be really pleased with himself, I think, there.
Producer Jim.
Okay, after a couple of bad weekends, the smooth operator is back. Amazing qualifying and race from Carlos Sainz to bag his first Williams podium. Could this just be the start for Carlos and Williams? Discuss.
Yes.
That was great, wasn't it? It was really, I was really happy to see Carlos. And the way he held off, actually, Kimi Antonelli, we were just talking about, was trying to put the pressure on to get that final podium spot. But fair play to Carlos Sainz. He played it very, very effectively throughout. Yes, he was second early on in the race, but George Russell played it well with the use of the tyres, but Carlos, I think, did a great job, and I'm so pleased for him because he'd scored so few points before that. Yes, he'd done well in qualifying at various, you know, quite a lot throughout the year. His relationship with Williams and the way he ran down, aww, after he got out of the car was wonderful. I have, yeah, been so excited and just leapt himself into the Williams crew. That was lovely.
Yeah, it was a magical moment for me. I mean, I was there when he got his first win. I was there when he got his first pole, and I just felt that same excitement for him. He's such a likable guy. He deserves so much. He was so unfortunate to be booted out of Ferrari in the first place for Lewis Hamilton to get his seat, and to be picked up by Williams and actually to build this bond, which I think is really special. Mm. Williams is such a heritage brand, and for a lot of people watching, it will still be their team, and it always will be. And for him to come to Williams and find form at this point, and it was magical to see him keep that. I didn't expect him to be on the podium, I have to admit. Even when you saw the results of qualifying, you were like, nice try, but I don't think he's keeping it. And he did. Amazing.
I know I'm a guest here and you're also a guest presenter, Jenny, so I might have to ask Ben this. Am I allowed to ask a question? Is that okay?
Oh, yes,
definitely. Because I'm really interested in your thoughts, Ben, Jenny, because I've never been worried about Carlos this year. To me, there's been enough flashes of pace, even though he's had messy races, bad luck. I've always thought it's going to come, and this weekend it did. Ben, you know, you've been watching F1 for so many years. You'll have seen people move from team to team. It feels like, particularly with Lewis and Carlos this season, they've really struggled, possibly because they're up against teammates that have been in the cars for ages. Were you ever worried about Carlos? Were there any points this season where you were thinking, oh, I'm just not sure this is going to work out?
No, not. I didn't think that Carlos had lost his talent. No.
No.
He's got great talent. He's got a very good mind and making things work. He's very good at that. And I agree. You know, I think when drivers, great drivers, go to new teams, as you say, both Lewis, Carlos, switching to different teams, it's very tough in the first year. There's no doubt. You've got to work with your engineer to understand the feeling of the car is different. Next year is slightly different again, because the cars will all be different, so your teammate will have to get used to it at the same time. But for someone like Charles Leclerc against Lewis Hamilton, he's used to the way that car has developed. For Alex Albon, he's very used to the way the Williams has developed. So it's very hard coming in, as you say. But he's got great talent, and going forwards, I think the Sainz-Williams relationship will still be important.
And especially on a weekend where Alex couldn't perform for the team and didn't, I think it was really important for actually Carlos to deliver for the team. And they've got two very good drivers. They might be Williams, they might not be at the top, but they have one of the top team lineups. So it's good for their future at Williams, and I think it will cement their place in the team and think, yeah, I'm here, and they all like it, and it's a celebration of what they've achieved so far.
And such a rare off weekend for Alex Albon, who's been sensational this year in point scoring. And again, like Piastri, I'm not worried about that. People have a bad weekend. But, you know, to Ben's point about his brain, there was a lovely moment where his race engineer, just after he'd been passed by George Russell, said, George is going to be tricky to pass now. It's almost like his race engineer is worried that he's going to be like, I need to get him back. I want this podium. And Carlos's intelligence of going, I know that position's gone. I'm not worried about that. I know third's massive for us. I'm already focusing on Kimi, just keeping Kimi behind us. It was like one step ahead. It's that sort of managing the most, being like, yeah, I'm with you, mate. That's fine. Don't worry about that. I've let that one go. I'm not going to overdo it. I'm not going to over race to try and get that back and be silly. I'm just going to focus on consolidating what we've got. It was like he was almost one step ahead of his race engineer. And as a team, if you're James Vowles, if you're his race engineer, it's going to give you so much comfort that that's why you've signed this guy. He is executing his racecraft. To be able to stay in that promising qualifying position was brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Producer Jim.
Okay, yet another flat weekend for Ferrari. Even Baku master Leclerc struggled. Is it time to just draw a line under 2025 and hope for the best with the new regs? what the hell is going on at Ferrari? Discuss.
I think they still might surprise us at some point.
No, come on. Are you kidding me?
Do you think they will get a result at some point?
What point?
Don't know. But some of these races that we go to, I mean, on Friday in practice, they were looking really quite impressive.
Yes, that's Friday. No points awarded on a Friday.
I know.
I don't like it when mum and dad argue.
Okay. Well, what do you reckon, Christian?
I don't care, Ben. To be honest with you, I think it's almost irrelevant. I would care if Lewis got a win, because obviously first win for Ferrari, all of that, you know, it'd be amazing. Even if Charles picks up one win, they proved last year that finishing second in the constructors doesn't really mean that much. This is Ferrari, right? I'll get excited when Ferrari prove they're capable of challenging for a world championship again. Whether they improve a bit in the at the end of the season and get a couple more podiums, or Charles wins one, fine, I'm not that bothered. I think for Ferrari, I just want to see them at the front. It's good for Formula One to see a competitive Ferrari that feels like it's going to be able to challenge for a world championship. So I just can't get too excited about them potentially getting second in the championship or not. It's just, to answer producer Jim's question, yes, let's just look at next year, guys, because you're not there to come second, are you? You're there to win.
And I worry, actually, that this sets another precedent of they're not going to be competitive next year. They haven't even, according to reports, got the engine on a dyno yet.
Good.
And we're talking about next year. Sounds it's promising. Not far away. Mm. And I don't understand this melee that hits Ferrari. Why are they not performing? Why are they unable to perform? They have the most amount of money of any team. They have Ferrari as a brand. They have Lewis Hamilton, Charles Leclerc. What's going wrong?
When's the
last time they won anything?
Yeah, it is a while now since the last one, yes.
Like 2009? Is that right? 2008, 2009?
In terms of titles you're talking about, right, yes, rather than winning races.
I mean, yes, it's nice to win a race, that's nice for them. Yeah.
Seven drivers, eight constructors. The 2007 drivers was the last drivers win. What, 2008 constructors, have I made that up?
I think you're right.
Anyway, ages ago.
Yeah.
What worries me most is I'm not sure I can cope with another year of Charles and Lewis looking sad. It'll break my heart, you know, just when Charles looks like a sort of puppy that's been left on his own in the living room for too long when he'd gone out for dinner. Lewis just looks like he'd rather be anywhere else in the world. It's just all very, very sad. Fred looking
sad.
It'll just all be very sad. I do think Ferrari need to stop chopping and changing and stick with a group of people for a bit. They've ever since stopping winning, they've not done that. So I agree, but I don't think they would do that if they came into this new reg cycle. When you've got people like James Vowles at Williams going, we're going to put everything into the new reg cycle and are still managing to improve. Mm. And I guess they'll be competitive in the new reg cycle. If Ferrari come into the new reg cycle and are not competitive, there'll be massive questions asked. So it's worrying. But we're going to think positively, and next year they'll be better and they'll fight for world championship. It'll be good for the sport. Charles and Lewis will look happy and it'll be great.
He's made me feel sad.
It's made me feel a bit sad as well.
I still think they're going to surprise us this year, but
that's good, Ben. I'm with Ben. That's fine. That'll be great. Lewis will win a race. That'll be nice.
Is it Lewis or Charles?
I'm not sure. It could be either. But the Charles crashed out in qualifying on Saturday. I think he could have put a good lap in, but he didn't get it. He went off at the wrong time. But anyway, let's see. Let's move on.
Okay, producer Jim, help.
Okay. Very good weekends from Tsunoda and Lawson. Felt like they were racing for their F1 careers, but have they done enough? Will we see them next year? Discuss.
Lawson was great, and actually, fair play. He had to sort of give up on third, which is where he qualified. That was an outstanding effort to qualify third. But he always knew that there were quick cars behind him. So to hold on to that very good result, I think that was impressive. And the way he did hold off that group. I know, you know, DRS does help in a way when you're in the group, DRS going down that long straight at Baku. But I was impressed with the way he dealt with it. And Yuki Tsunoda, yes, that was a much better weekend. There are some mixed opinions, I think, as to whether, you know, has he really lifted it to another level? But he is feeling more confident with the car. And that's what I'm liking. That's what I'm enjoying. He's actually feeling as though the changes we were talking about they've made to Red Bull actually are suiting him now.
Formula One seasons feel very long in this modern era of them starting on New Year's Day and finishing on Christmas Eve. So it wasn't that long ago where Liam Lawson was deputising for Daniel Ricciardo and everybody in the Formula One world's going, he needs to have a seat. He's then didn't get the seat and was messed around there. Then he had only a short period of time in the RB seat before going to Red Bull, before being sacked after 7 minutes. He's had so much to deal with. And there's, then within that, you've sort of seen with the fandom this change in narrative that he's not worthy of his seat. He's a really good racing driver. He's a really good racing driver. And I think a period of stability in his career will do him the world of good. So I'd be staggered if he wasn't at RB next season. I think a period of stability would do him good for the ultimate aim of doing a Gasly. He's not going to get a Red Bull second chance. It seems really unlikely. History tells us with your Albons, with your Gaslys, they don't get a second chance. So he'll hope to be attract the attention of another team and continue his F1 career elsewhere, which I think is very possible. As for Yuki, it feels less likely. I think he would need realistically every single weekend like this one and maybe a bit more.
Yeah.
Laurent Mekies is really interesting because he's got a better perspective than Christian Horner to make this decision. He has managed both drivers in both teams. So he's seen Lawson at RB. He's now working with Yuki, who as I say, has been across both. So I sort of trust he's going to make the right decision as to who goes alongside Max, because you couldn't wish for a better overarching perspective, could you?
Yeah, it's not a bad position to be in now for Lauren, to be able to have this chessboard in front of him and pick the right person for the right seats. But I do think if you look at Lawson, his defence was absolutely masterful. And I'm no driver by any stretch of the imagination, but Ben, looking at it from a driver's point of view, it must have been a treat to watch.
It was good, and he was very controlled, and I think that was absolutely top level. We've seen other drivers in Formula One do that. I mean, Ocon's one of those who can do that extremely well too. But I was impressed because Lawson's had a bit of an up and down season, and he knows, you know, when you're in that position in the last third of the season and there's questions about whether you're going to be in Formula One, the pressure's on you even more. And I think he dealt with both the pressure and the cars right behind him really good. I was impressed.
He's also always had those questions. He's not had, as I keep saying, the period of stability. And therefore, he has been guilty of being over-aggressive at times. But I think that's really understandable on a human perspective when he's not had the stability that other drivers have had. So I forgive him for being a bit over-aggressive. And oh, actually, good. You know, we want a bit of spice, we want a bit of fight. So no, I rate Liam Lawson. I'm really pleased for him. It's an example of what he's capable of doing. And I think you'll see more performances like that from him next season in that seat. And as I say, I hope it's the start of him turning around that narrative. And I think ultimately, you know, an Alpine or somewhere like that could be a future destination for Liam Lawson.
I think the one thing to keep in your mind is Perez used to go so well around Baku.
He did, didn't he?
In the second seat. So is this just a second seat fluke for Tsunoda? Or actually, did he find some confidence? Did he, his sim session back at Milton Keynes, people are saying that that had a big effect after Monza. So it'll be really interesting to see Singapore, where Red Bull don't traditionally go so well. Can Tsunoda keep up with Max again and deliver for the team again? And if he can, I think that's a good position for him to be in, with Lauren Mekies there making the decisions for next year.
I'd be really tempted if I was... And Laura, as I say, Lauren's in a shock horror. He's in a better position than me to make this decision. And that's a controversial thing to say. I'd be very tempted if I was him to go, you know, we're going into a new rule cycle. Yuki is an experienced Formula One driver. He might not be our long-term future. But let's not risk the development of our next young promising driver in Isaac Hadjia. Let's give him another year, which we've not done in the past.
Doesn't sound entirely Red Bull-like, does it?
No, but they are in a new era now.
Which brings me on to producer Jim.
Yes, life after Captain Christian special, dare we dream. Two wins on the bounce for Max under new management. The team spirit looks to be back and now 44 points behind Oscar in the championship. Max and Red Bull, they couldn't, could they? Discuss.
Well, it's fun that it's actually not impossible that Max Verstappen could close that gap up even more. You know, the performance he's done in the last two races, Monza and Baku, dominated, absolutely dominated. Monza, pure pace. Baku was pace, but it was also clever what he did in qualifying, getting it right at the right time. And he has that ability. That's not always going to happen. We're going to go to some circuits, I think, where the Red Bull still perhaps is not going to be the fastest. Even as you said, they've made some great modifications to it. Whether he's going to challenge for the title, who knows? I think it makes it interesting for us all that it's not impossible.
Come on, we all know it's not going to happen. He's taken 50 points from the last two races. Great stuff for him. I really appreciate what he's done. And I've looked at him and thought, That's impressive. Again, he outdelivers that car. But going forward, he needs to outscore Piastri by 10 points at least every race. There's only 7 race weekends to go. There's still sprint races to go as well, but 7 race weekends. He cannot do that. It's not sustainable. We know how good, how precise Piastri is, apart from Baku. So I think it's out of the question, surely.
From what I understand, nobody usually praises Max Verstappen on this podcast. There's not usually a sort of pro Red Bull person around, so I'll fill that thing here. F1 celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. In 75 years' time, they'll still be talking about Max Verstappen. Like, we're lucky to be living through the era of Max Verstappen. I don't like comparing the generations of your Fangios to Schumachers to Hamiltons, etc. But put it this way, I don't think anyone's been better at it than Max Verstappen. He is, and he is right at his peak. So if anyone's going to do it, it's him. He is sensational. He is unbelievable. He is terrifying if you are anyone other than Red Bull, because you only need to get your, if you're Red Bull, you only need to get your car near the best and he'll put it in a title challenge. He's a cheat code. So I can't rule him out. I think it's possible, particularly when we've seen that McLaren can, you know, if you're going, oh yeah, but McLaren are never off the podium. Well, look at what we've just seen. So, oh, it's possible. I can't sit here. I'd love to genuinely be like, no, it's not going to happen. I just can't do it. I can't.
Phenomenal. The bounce back would be the biggest bounce back ever in the history of F1. If that was to happen.
Let's go beyond F1. One of the greatest comebacks in terms in the history of sport. It would be an unbelievable sporting story. And it would go under the radar because it's Max Verstappen. Because outside of F1, people expect Max to win. But if he won last season and he didn't have the best car from Miami onwards. And people turn around to me who, you know, go, oh, but it's always got the best car, isn't it? Well, no, because Max didn't have the best car last year. To do it this year, it would be insane, and it's possible.
Well, social media has been busy as ever over the weekend. And what caught my eye was actually this morning, not during the race, and it was a race to get back home. And I love this. So Carlos Sainz, Charles Leclerc, their flight is diverted. They can't get home. So what do? They're F1 drivers. Of course, they don't hire a plane or a helicopter. They hire a van and Carlos Sainz drives the two of them home. And the social media post is so funny. And Charles Leclerc says, I didn't think my weekend could get any worse, but now it is. And Carlos is at the wheel. And I just love those moments in F1. They're so obscure, abstract, but gorgeous.
I agree. You showed me it just before we came on and I was really surprised. It was beautifully done by Charles Leclerc, who put it online.
I enjoy when Formula One feels a bit rubbish. Like they're these elite level people in the like most grand sport in the world, and somebody from their management team is on the phone to Enterprise, other rental services are available, going, I need to get Carlos Sainz home somehow. And someone going like, Carlos, we've got you a van. One Christmas I forgot to hire a van to drive home and had to, me and my partner at the time drove up the M1 in a van, which was ludicrous. It's a bit like that. It's when life goes, oh, well, we'll roll with it. I thought it was excellent. And from the video as well, you could tell Carlos was on form. His control at the wheel of that van looked fantastic. It was wonderful. You could tell he'd had a good weekend.
It's nice to know that he's got a future career laid out for him if he ever needs it.
Yes.
A taxi driver. Would you pay for a taxi ride with Carlos Sainz?
Without question.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'd be in there straight away.
Question. There's a lot of options for Carlos in the future. You know, hair model, you know, great head of hair on him. Think of the money he'd make from shampoo ads, van driver. You've got to have a plan B.
And he's got a plan B. That's good.
He's got money.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of social media, make sure you follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, because we're thoroughly enjoying all of this. Right. Okay. Christian, very much you are a well-known voice in the Formula One world.
We're that far, but thank you.
Yeah. Well, the Fast and the Curious podcast, alongside your broadcast work on Explains and on BBC Radio. How did you first get into Formula One?
I think, well, it's a lot to do with my dad. It's my dad's fault. He was a huge motorsport fan. Used to have a motocross bike as a kid and race motocross. So he was a huge racing fan. Always more two wheels. But because if you're into any motor racing and you're at home on a Sunday, you flick the F1 on, don't you? And I went through this thing of sort of firstly finding myself fascinated. Well, no, firstly thinking like, well, no, I want to watch kids' TV. This is in the 90s. There's only one telly in the house. So for God's sake, I'm going to have to, you know, yield the telly to dad. And then all of a sudden you're interested in it. And I can remember, I always say this, the 1998 Belgian Grand Prix, which I think was the first time where it's like, okay, you've hooked my interest here, which was, for those that don't know, the most chaotic start in the world with rain. A big crash at the start that wiped out half the grid. Damon Hill won in a Jordan. Huge shock. And then I can remember just sort of being semi-interested from then. And then dad saying to me, I think this was... And I watched Hakkinen win in 98 and 99, and that hooked my interest a bit. And then dad saying to me, oh, the cars are coming back soon, Christian. And, you know, oh, Eddie Irvine's not in a Ferrari anymore. And Rubens Barrichello, there's a new one at Ferrari. And I'm like, oh, what? They move from team to team. And that's all fascinating. And all of a sudden I'd gone from sort of enjoying not having them around so I could watch the telly on a Sunday to actually, oh, I can't wait for it to come back. And then I was hooked. I was just a super fan across the 2000s and have ended up talking about it a lot.
Lovely.
And talking about it, what have you made of this year's championship?
I think it's been wonderful because I have never... I'm a big football fan. I'm a big Leicester City fan. I've got a huge favourite team. You can't win them all, exactly, Jenny. With Formula One, it's never been like that so much. I liked Jensen growing up. I liked Lewis, but I've always just been a fan of the sport. So I don't really care who wins. I like watching it on a Sunday because you say watch Leicester on a Saturday and it'll let you down and you'll feel sad. F1 very rarely does that because
apart from Ferrari, not
me. Yeah, well, I'm not a Ferrari fan. I'm not a Red Bull fan. I'm not a McLaren fan. I just love the sport. So for me, I just want it to be close. And this year, it is close. We've got a battle, so I'm loving it.
One thing you've been focusing on quite a lot, actually, is the rookies. So tell me your actual thoughts. I mean, which of the rookies are really flying well at the moment, or which are struggling a bit?
We had on the Fast and the Curious, we had Isaac Hadjar on last week. And I just think it's been lovely to see him come in and do so well in the pressurised Red Bull system. I think that's been great. I've also been so impressed with the way... I just think back to say sort of like Logan Sargeant, who had a very, his first F1 race was always quite promising. And then he had, I think it was in Saudi, where he had a lap deleted and he fell out and he would have gotten through to Q2. And then he had a mistake. And you just think it doesn't take a lot for a narrative around a rookie to change. I don't think Logan ever really, after a promising first race, never really recovered from that. Mm. And you think of Isaac in Australia. I was there. I was on the ground in Australia and I saw him in the paddock with a face like thunder. He oozed tension and stress after what he'd done on the formation lap when he crashed. To recover from that and have the season he's had shows such a great deal of mental strength. And he's so likable and he's so relaxed. I interviewed him after a practice session in Japan. And I just said to him, Isaac, you know, FP2, that looks quite promising. And his face lit up and he was like, oh, it was great. And seeing him enjoy it, that's such a key to, I think, any rookie. And seeing him so happy at just an FP2 and a promising FP2. So I think he's really been great. And I don't think there's a rookie that's really overly struggling. I think maybe Ollie Bearman's made a few too many mistakes at times, but I still think there's a good pace there. And I think you'd probably see him settle in the second season at Haas. I think it's been a really promising season for the rookies.
I think it's been fun, actually. Yeah, it's really good to have quite a bunch of rookies and yeah, especially with new cars coming up next year. Mm. Well, it is time for our We Need to Talk About section in this podcast. And what I want to bring in, actually, is about McLaren's management of their two drivers, because both Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri fighting for the championship, even though, as we have mentioned, it's not impossible that Max could get involved. But really, it is still between those two. They didn't actually win the Constructors' Championship this weekend in Baku. We thought they might do, but it's more like to happen in Singapore. But it's a question really about how do we think McLaren are dealing with all this at the moment. I mean, Oscar had a tough weekend. It was interesting hearing from Andrea Stella that he felt they hadn't actually set the cars up quite as well as they could have done. But remember, at the previous race in Monza, McLaren had made that decision that with Lando having a slow pit stop, that Oscar had to let him back through. And that has certainly lit up a lot of thoughts about how is this team operating. What do you both think about it?
Well, I think it's operating at an outrageous level. And the bosses, Zak Brown and Andrea Stella, are just phenomenal. And what they've been able to achieve and continue to achieve with their drivers, it's on another level. And it's not something we're used to seeing too much in F1, that level of parity between two drivers in a team. yes, you've got all sorts of teams and the intra-team work normally blows up at some point or other when you're fighting for a championship. They are categorically going out of their way not to let that happen. And I think it's so different and it's so rare to see, but it's fascinating and real insight into how to manage and truly manage two drivers. Look at the, if you look at history, recent history, Toto Wolff, one of the all-time greats when it comes to sporting management, couldn't get Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg to balance together, to work together as a team. It imploded. But yet they can at McLaren, and it's fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I think it's a very modern Formula One championship fight. I think there's an ability with modern day Formula One drivers now to separate almost personal and professional. I think you can see on the track that there's no less desire to beat each other, but then they can be friendly with each other off the track. I think there's various reasons behind that. I think that's really interesting. And then with McLaren, I think they're sort of almost capitalising on that by saying we are going to manage it in this way. And the thing is, well, I judge it on results, and so far it's working. It can't be argued that it's working. People may not like it. It may prove controversial. There are Formula One fans of one particular driver that look for examples of the team favouring one to the other. I firmly believe that's not the case, that they are very much giving them equal parity to go and do this. Where it gets interesting is in the heat of battle. It's working for now. Will it continue to work? Will there be a flashpoint? Yeah, I agree, Jenny.
It's impressive.
They've done very well with it. No, absolutely. They've kept them together very well. I agree. And they're both very talented drivers, you know, and that's what's so fun for all of us watching to see who's going to end up as champion. But they are both very talented. And I do feel the team are working with both. Give them what they can and then let them get on with it.
I'm quite fortunate. I've got a good relationship with McLaren. Both drivers come on the Fast and the Curious a lot. We're really grateful for that. I actually think they're both really good human beings. We sometimes forget when we're analysing top level sport to look at the human side. I think they're both really good guys. I think they get on with each other well. I think they're respectful of the team. They're respectful of the journey the team's been on from, 2023 at Bahrain, where they were the slowest car on the grid. I think they're both good, hard-working human beings who are respectful to each other, and I think that's really important. I think they're a credit to McLaren in the way they've gone racing this year. There might be a flashpoint. Of course there might be a flashpoint. There'll probably be a point where they feel they can't work together anymore when one does ultimately beat the other. I don't think that's too far down the line, where look at, for example, when Sebastian Vettel was beaten by Daniel Ricciardo and felt that he had to go and reset at Ferrari. I think you'll see that in the medium to long term, but I think when that happens, it'll be done respectfully. I think they're a credit to themselves, and I think it's been a really interesting thing to watch. We've not seen anything quite like this before in Formula One.
No, you're right. No, it's been a really good battle, and thank you. It's always good to have the we need to talk about. Lovely. Something else to discuss now is what's coming up next, which is, of course, Singapore. Lando Norris won Singapore last year. He had a good podium finish before that as well. We've seen McLaren having a bit of a tough weekend, of course, in Baku. It's not been, as you mentioned already, it's not a great place for Red Bull, for Max Verstappen, funnily enough. It's not been one of Max Verstappen's great circuits. What do we think going forwards in Singapore? What are our thoughts as to who's going to be up there?
I've only just thought of this, but on that, you're right. Singapore was the one that they didn't win when they won everything, didn't they? When Carlos won in the Ferrari in 2023. Historically, it has been the track that Red Bull have struggled at. So therefore, I think if Red Bull go and put out a similar performance this weekend, maybe you know they are really going to be there or thereabouts every race at the end of the season, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, actually, if they did it there, yes, that would certainly show that they're going to be strong everywhere. But what do you think, Jenny?
So I think McLaren will be back to winning ways. I think sealing the Constructors' Championship in Singapore would be pretty special, maybe more special than Baku. Baku doesn't have that like real razzmatazz, whereas Singapore, under their lights, night race, and you can see the fireworks exploding at the end with Piastri maybe bouncing back really hard, because he does like a bounce back, and after his failure. And I think he will take it personally. He'll want to come back and he'll go out there and win. I do also foresee that maybe Lewis or Charles could challenge for the podium, maybe be on pole, because the Ferrari doesn't deliver in the race, it seems. But there's a little hope that if you can get it all hooked up together and both drivers will feel disappointed with how it worked out in Baku. So maybe Singapore, we've seen stunning pole laps from both Lewis and from Charles, and I think they could deliver that for you.
Yeah, and that
for
matters.
For you, of course.
That matters. That matters. Well, we've got the prediction championship of the world coming up. So come on, tell us where we're at.
Okay, so you're right. The rules of the Prediction Championship of the World are fiendishly simple. You'll be pleased to know. Pick a winner. You receive 6 points, 4 points for second and 2 points for third and 1 point for the fastest lap. Ben, producer Jim, our esteemed guest, and Nicola all get to guess. I don't have to. Park. We are 17 races into our very own championship of the world. So let's take a look at the championship table. It's very close. So Nicola on 60 points, 6 points for the max win. Producer Jim, well done, 6 points. And you are also on 60 points. It's hotting up.
Oh, it's close at the top, isn't
it? Team guest, 57. Big fat zero from Louise Goodman.
Oh, Louise, come what on. A legend. Oh,
thought
that's sad.
Be better.
Yeah,
that's and,
sad.
And Ben?
Big fat zero. Nothing. Yeah, no surprise for me.
55 points.
But only 5 points in it, Ben. You're not out of it, are you?
No.
But you are the Max Verstappen of this, but you're not out of it.
There's always hope.
Yeah.
There's always hope.
Yeah. So no pressure at all, Christian. But Team Guest now need a big point scoring weekend. So looking ahead to Singapore, have a think. Who are you going to pick?
Well, we do predictions on the Fast and the Curious, but because it's a fundamentally not as well produced podcast as this one, we don't do any sort of points or anything. But if it were, I would be miles at the back. I genuinely don't think I predicted a race winner right all season, fundamentally calling into question why I make Formula One podcasts for a living.
So are you the Franco Colapinto of this race?
Oh, no, I'm the... Oh, honestly, yeah, it's a shambles. It is a shambles. It puts my seat under pressure. I will, based on the fact that we've been talking about it's a tricky Red Bull circuit, if I was going to guess a top four, let's say I'd put Max fourth. So on that basis, I'm going to be bold. I'm going to go Hamilton third. I'm going to go Norris second. And I think Oscar Piastri, he's due. Lando's been the quicker McLaren for two weekends in a row. I think he'll bounce back. Let's go on Oscar Piastri win. So Piastri, Norris, Hamilton.
And fastest lap?
Oh, fastest lap. Mm. Oh, okay. Oh, Charles Leclerc. He's good for a fastest lap, is Charles. I don't know why he's not on the podium if he's got the fastest lap, but something will happen. I don't know. I'll get a tyre, get a punch.
One lap wonder.
Yeah.
Fine. Ben.
Tricky, yeah. That's a good selection, actually.
Is it?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good selection. I was tempted to go very similar, but I'm going to go for Lando Norris for the win.
Nice.
I'm going to go for Piastri second. I think we might get another McLaren 1-2 there, but we shall see. And I'm going to go for Leclerc third, Verstappen fastest lap.
And we've got this from Nicola. I wonder who she might be going for.
Right, predictions. Okay, Max P1. Why? Because Max is back, the king is back, the absolute legend is back, and let's be honest, there's a chance that he could still win the championship. P2, I'm going to go Oscar, because I think he's going to come back fighting because he hasn't had a very good weekend in Baku, and I feel like that's probably the right thing for him. He's going to come back fighting. And then I'm going to go P3, Charles Leclerc. I base that on nothing. And fastest lap to Max.
Well, who knows where she is at this moment in time? Maybe she's camping this weekend?
She looks like she's at Centre Parks.
I'm sure, a whale of a time.
Sure she's not at Centre. She'll be by some car somewhere, I imagine. But
probably. Off-roading. Producer Jim.
Okay, I'm going to go for Norris for the win, Max for second because I think they are genuinely back, and Oscar third with Russell fastest lap because it might be cold.
Russell, yeah. Oh. I forgot Mercedes will still be there, yeah.
You can never forget.
No.
No. Well, make sure you keep putting your predictions on the comments section if you're watching on YouTube or TikTok. We promise we will weed some out. Well, I promise Nicola will. I won't. Christian.
You don't care, do you? You won't be here next week. You can promise away. Nicola's got to do it. I promise Nicola will read them out in French.
I love that. We can promise everything and deliver nothing. Exactly. Christian, thank you so much for joining us on the Windy Week F1 podcast. Now, it's tradition that you have to impart with us wisdom, fact, something funny. Go.
I'm going to go for something funny. I'm going to let you choose. I'm going to give you a word. You can either go for toilet or medical centre?
It's always going to be toilet.
Okay. Cast your mind back to Silverstone this year. The world is talking about the fact Nico Hülkenberg has got his first F1 podium. Everybody's talking about it. The checkered flag's fallen. I'm rushing out of my office working on site to go and record a podcast, to leave the circuit, to go and record the podcast. It's all go, go, go. And because, you know, when you're sort of rushing, you sort of got the fast-paced walk on, I opened the door and did that thing where you nearly take somebody out with the pushing the door open. And who is walking out of the loo just before the podium? It's Nico Hülkenberg. The whole world is talking about him. I've just been talking about him. It's just me and Nico there in the loo. And I'm sort of thinking to myself, he's just washed his hands. He's on the way out as I'm on the way in. And I just sort of had to go, oh, well done on the podium, Nico. To which he sort of chuckled and went, thanks, man. And the fact that I think I was probably the first person to talk to Nico Hülkenberg after his first wee as an F1 podium, as a F1 podium placeholder, I'll always have that. You can never take that away from me. Like Leicester City winning the Premier League, I'll always have it. No matter how things bad things get in the future, I'll always be the first person to speak to Nico after his first wee as an F1 podium placeholder.
That's lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really, thank you.
Thank you.
Don't go to the toilet anywhere near him.
No, absolutely.
Sounds worse than it should.
Thank you, Christian, for joining us. Really good.
Thank you. Very much enjoyed it. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Jenny.
Brilliant. Well, we are looking forward to our next podcast, of course. And on that occasion, we'll be studying what went on in Singapore and we'll be looking forward to the USA Grand Prix.
Can't wait. Don't forget to hit the bell and subscribe on YouTube so you don't miss a single episode and all the little bits extra we'd like to deliver to you. No pressure, Nicola. Deliver away, Ben, too. Thank you so much for having me on as a guest. It's been fun. Hopefully you've enjoyed it too. Remember, comment as much as you can and listen to the podcast and they will see you in a couple of weeks.